Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and katanas presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin Sama, here today with Barrett Dudley Sama to digest and discuss the seventh episode of Shogun on Hulu/FX titled A Stick of Time.
Stick of Time.
Barrett.
I loved when A Stick of Time turned out to be exactly that, a stick of time.
Quite literal.
Quite literally.
Indeed. Before we dive into today's episode of Shogun, give us a follow on social media, if you would, please. We're at Oysters, Clams, Cockles on Instagram, at Oysters, Clams, and Cockles on the old TikTok, and at Clams and Cockles on X, formerly known as Twitter. Also follow Mr. Barrett Dudley, at Barrett Dudley on Instagram and X, and follow me at WR Bolin on Instagram and X as well. Thank you very much. All right, you want to get into this thing?
Yeah, I mean, unless you want to talk about the Harvard Skin Book.
What the hell is that?
You didn't see this?
No.
The Harvard Library, they had to remove their skin book.
Yeah, what's a skin book? Is it exactly what it sounds like?
Yeah, it was a book from like the 1600s that was bound in human skin, which was a thing that happened back then. They were just binding all sorts of books in human skin because, you know, leather was expensive, so people would die, and they would just take the human skin and they would bind the books with the human skin. And you know, we're getting big like Hocus Pocus vibes here with the witch book and all that type of thing. Apparently, for a long time, you could just go check out this, like, any student, anybody, you could just go to the Harvard Library, you could check it out.
You could take
it home with you. This is apparently all, you know, involved in all sorts of hazing rituals and the secret societies and whatnot. And they've decided that it's unethical to have the skin book. And so they removed it from their library and they're trying to figure out what to do with the skin.
The skin book got canceled?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah. Some, you know, they want to bury the skin or something like that.
I'm glad we got this update.
Yeah. Yeah. Top. So just, I didn't know if y'all, I don't know. It just felt very like it kind of. Like, if somebody pulled out a skin book in Shogun, would you be totally shocked?
Nah, yeah, it'd make a lot more sense than in 2024 being a thing at Harvard.
Yeah, yeah. So, shouts to the skin book, though. R.I.P. skin.
Weirdo Ivy Leaguers, man. They're just out there doing it. All right, let's dive into A Stick of Time. We open this episode with a flashback to Lord Torinaga's first battle 46 years ago, and it was kind of like a pump fake, because, you know.
Because right off top, you're like, they won!
Wow! We're really skipping into the future, right? Because last episode ends with him declaring Crimson Sky.
Yes, yeah.
And then this one opens with a...
Crimson Sky!
This one opens with a battle being won, and you're like, holy shit, am I on the wrong episode? What
did
I miss?
Right.
But yeah, it turns out this is a flashback to when he's a 12-year-old boy, the boy warlord, as the surrendering, defeated lord ends up calling him. But yeah, he wins his first battle as a young boy, and the dude he defeats asks him to serve as his second while he commits seppuku. So when you kill yourself, seppuku style, you nominate what is known as a second.
That's right.
To be there is to where after you split your belly open, they chop off your head so it ends more quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Back basically after episode one, while I was doing, you know, hours worth of seppuku research, I learned this. Yeah. So you do the gutting yourself is almost like ceremonial.
And to show you can
show
do
you,
it.
Right. And then you are typically put out of your misery by your second, as you noted, who chops your head off.
Right.
And it is very, like, you know, we just to continue making Game of Thrones comparisons, right? Like, it is it's a big deal to be a good samurai, and like a skill is just like one clean sweep, like done. Like, that's a thing. And obviously, we'll all remember that that a guy like Ned Stark, very good at this. Somebody like Theon Greyjoy, aka Reek, you know, not quite the same level of efficiency.
No, it took quite a few hacks for old Theon there.
So it kind of
disgusting.
It this reminded me of that a little bit, and right off the bat, you're like, it's, you can see that this boy warlord is just that. He is a boy. Lara estimated him. She nailed it. She was like, what's this 12-year-old going to do? What's he doing in battle? And I was like, surely he's 14 or 15, even though he looks like a baby.
12.
No, indeed 12. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you could tell the defeated lord was kind of saying something here.
I think so.
Right?
Yes.
Like challenging him to see if he's even ready for this sort of deal.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting because we get more and more of the story over the course of the episode. We can just talk about it up front. Though. Like, we're told by, what is it, Psyche, Torunaga's brother, uh-huh. Psyche, that part of Torunaga's legend as this boy warlord is that he was nominated as a second, and he took this dude's head off with one stroke of the sword.
Which would be incredible for a 12-year-old.
Right.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. So it kind of builds this legend of Torunaga.
Yeah.
But then Torunaga tells us when he's talking with Hiromatsu at the end of the episode how ridiculous that was, and that it was much more of a Theon Greyjoy situation where he was hacking over and over and over to get this dude's head off. It was cool that they give us this cold open flashback. They don't show the end result. They don't show him.
Yeah.
You know, he draws his blade back and then it cuts to the intro sequence.
I would say that we do finally get the seppuku here, though.
We've
talked about kind of the anticipation of it. They keep alluding to it or nodding their heads at it or showing that it's about to happen and then going fully off screen for it. We see a dude stab himself in the stomach and rip his guts out.
Yeah, and it's like the stab and then the rip.
Yeah.
And it was gnarly. And they gave us a close up. It was pretty disgusting. So yeah, that happened, and certainly it makes you wonder how Torunaga found himself in a position to be leading battles at 12 years old in the first place. That just seems, like you said, that's too young. He's a small boy.
And it made me think also, how old is the heir to the Taiko
right now?
Yeah, because he seems about the same age, right?
Right? Maybe if not a little older,
maybe 9 or 10, I guess. But
yeah,
but I thought about that too, because if Torunaga could be this boy warlord, what's stopping, you know, the Taiko's son from essentially just taking over at a very early age? I don't know.
He's not built that way.
He doesn't have that dog in him.
He doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't. Anyway, we rejoin the present after the intro sequence where Torunaga and company await his half brother Psyche Nobutatsu. All right, we heard about this dude last episode. It was suggested, we'll get your half-brother, we'll team up with him, and then we'll have enough men to go do Crimson Sky, because ours got wiped out by this earthquake, right? They're going to request his assistance in executing Crimson Sky and attacking Osaka Castle, and Torunaga hasn't spoken to his brother in a long time, so there's already, just at the get-go, like, Hiromatsu and Buntaro are talking. Buntaro's asking Hiromatsu, like, yeah, when's the last time these two spoke? And Hiromatsu just says, like, way too long.
Yeah.
So there's already some concern that he will not agree to squad up with them. And just kind of, let me put it this way. The questionable vibes are thrown out early and often with this Psyche character here.
Yeah, and this was just another fantastic episode that even when there was almost no reason to be concerned, like, I could just feel my stomach churning a little bit. Like, it just, from the jump, this episode just has this, like, simmering tension. And even though I could feel that, like, I still didn't totally see the twist coming.
Right.
So,
yeah, but this dude,
really well done.
Psyche, very ominous, right? He kind of fake is angry with Torunaga, and then he's just like, ha ha ha, just kidding.
Classic mischievous anti-hero slash maybe good guy, maybe bad guy.
Right.
To do the, you know, the old switcheroo. He's like, ha ha, I'm very mad, very mad. Ha ha, just kidding.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, you laugh and you're like, I was just pulling your leg, you know?
Even to take it back to Game of Thrones.
But maybe I'm not.
In episode one, when Ned Stark is waiting in Winterfell and, you know, the king rolls in.
Yes, they
have the exact same type of exchange, right?
Yep.
but yeah, Psyche, he wants to party. He's stoked about the hot springs.
Oh, you mean Psyche loves the sake?
He loves the sake. Psyche loves the sake and the hot springs. That's what he's in Izu for. These are the two things he wants.
The hot springs do look... they look just fantastic.
Very enjoyable.
Mighty great. Yeah.
Indeed. What they're going to do today is they're going to let him go see the hot springs, and then they're going to eat and drink tonight, And then tomorrow, Torinaga will give him his plan for them teaming up and and going and attacking Osaka, right? So Torinaga summons Blackthorn and tells him, look, you got to be on your best behavior. You got to carry your swords. You keep rolling around with the pistol at your side, the one you've got left, right? Put the pistol away. Carry your swords as is befitting a Hatamoto. And even to take it back to when Psyche first rolls up, Mariko tells Blackthorn, like, please don't forget to bow, right? Like, that, you can tell she's looking out for him a little bit, which was interesting. But Blackthorn, when talking to Torinaga, once again, he just wants his ships and his men back. All right. And once again, Torinaga tells him to get lost.
Yeah. I mean, here he's not even really asking for the ships, though.
He's just like, what
am I doing?
Am I going to be in the ship when y'all do Crimson Sky?
Yeah. What is
Crimson Sky? Torinaga's like, I don't want to talk about Crimson Sky.
Yeah. And at this point, I at least kind of understood this kind of line of questioning from Blackthorn made more sense to me, because at this point, his usefulness is starting to run out a little bit.
Right. Like, what's the point of me being here?
He's kind of just flapping in the wind, and like, what are you going to do with this guy? He's not really a piece of leverage anymore. They lost half their army. There's nobody to train. They've got one ship. What are they even going to do with the cannons? Like, you know what I mean? So you kind of understand Blackthorn's POV here, where he's just like what's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
What's my role in this? Now, the one thing that this is also starting to make me think about, and this is ongoing for two or three episodes now, but after this scene, and then there's another one that, you know, but my point is, we still have not seen the Portuguese in like 3 hours now.
Right. Where are these?
Where are they?
Yeah.
That has to be coming back. It's almost like they've been so removed from the picture at this point that by the end of this episode, we're really like, these guys are pressed. They've got no moves, except for we have not been reminded of the Portuguese in like 3 hours. So you know that has to be a piece of this.
You would think so, yeah. Right? Yeah, I agree with you, though. Blackthorn's line of questioning here does seem much more fair than his standard, slightly more annoying version,
right,
where he just like, my men, my ship.
Yeah.
What's up with those two things? He's like, all these gifts you've given me, all these honors bestowed upon me.
Right.
I've saved your life twice. You've made me head of cannon practice. I'm coaching now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a crib, a consort. But for what?
Right.
When push comes to shove and I could actually serve you, you're not even allowing me to. I'm sidelined.
Yep.
And it's a frustrating moment as a viewer, because you're looking to see some movement here, some type of change.
Mm-hmm.
And Torinaga, same old thing. No, basically get out of my sight.
Right.
Right. And Blackthorn tells Mariko to tell Torinaga, you know, whatever fate brings our way, I'll be here with you, basically, which is weird because he says that, and then at the end of the episode, he does what he does, which we'll get to. So anyway, Torinaga also, after Blackthorn leaves, tells Mariko he's pissed about how much a week of Kiku's services cost for Psyche. So he's booked up Kiku for his half-brother to entertain him for the week, and it's like 12,000 of whatever unit of money or whatever. Mariko explains that that's actually the price was cut. They got a discount from Jin, the head of Willow World, the manager, in exchange for, actually, she's the owner of Willow World.
Yeah.
In exchange for a stick of time, right? Which, as we find out, it's a meeting that lasts as long as it takes a stick of incense to burn.
I also thought that this was good confirmation that the more powerful and important the person getting the
service,
the courtesan,
the
more expensive the price. So it does not, Kiku's the goat, but it's like, it's way more based on who you're getting Kiku for. You want the goat for this very important person that you're trying to make a deal with, price of the brick going up.
Exactly, yeah. Yesterday's price is not today's price.
That's right, yeah.
Speaking of which, Omi goes to Willow World to request Kiku's company, and Jin tells him that Kiku is unavailable as she's entertaining Torinaga's brother for a week. And she even says something like, perhaps we can find a courtesan that's more fitting to like a young, ambitious samurai like yourself.
Yeah.
Almost being like,
Kiku's out of your league.
Yeah, dude, you can't afford her. You can't afford her. Let's get you somebody that's at your level, right?
Yeah.
But she also, Jin, tells Omi a little bit of information about the Anjin's stay at Willow World.
Oh, yeah.
That if she remembers correctly, his mind was on someone else the whole time he was there. Because Omi says, like, I'm going to be honest with you. This place has been sullied for me, ruined for me. Ever since the Anjin, the barbarian came and pillowed with Kiku here, I'm out on Willow World. Yeah. I no longer want my season pass.
Right.
But, and yeah, she kind of lets a little, it's hard to get a read on Jin in this episode. Because
loose lips, they sink ships.
Right.
Us. That's, you know, I've heard that before. And she's pretty fast and loose with this information. But she was also giving, sorry to keep making the comparison, I can't help it. But like every kind of show like this needs a Varys.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of need a keeper of secrets. And she was giving me those vibes big time in this episode. And it very much seemed like letting this piece of information slip out was intentional.
Yeah, it was just hard to get a feel for like how this played into her.
Yeah, we don't know.
Larger picture scheming.
We'll obviously get to her big scene
right
here, because it was all, once again, this Willow World thing. Jin continues to be a little bit vague, continues mm-hmm. to be pretty obfuscated by the writers and the show.
Turns out what happens in Willow World, though, does not stay in Willow
That's
World.
Right. Yeah.
As,
point being, and yes, the piece of information here is that it sounds like not only the way that she says it is basically that Blackthorn was more interested in somebody else. Pretty easy to make the jump that was Mariko, but also that he didn't pillow Kiku, most likely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we were all already suspicious of. Right.
Yep.
So that night at dinner with Torinaga and all of Torinaga's men, Psyche starts getting a little rambunctious. He's telling stories of young Torinaga to Torinaga's son, Naga Kado, right? He tells him of his first battle, which we had at the flashback at the beginning of the episode, how he served as second to the Lord committing seppuku and took his head with one stroke. Psyche then, you can tell, like you said, Barrett likes the sake. He refuses to wait until tomorrow to discuss their potential alliance. He suggests, like, hey, I really like this Izu place. I dig the hot springs. Kiku's great. It'd be really cool if I was given Izu, in kind of suggesting, like, in exchange for, in, you know, as part
right.
of our alliance. So
yeah,
at this point in the conversation, you're not really set up to think like, ooh, here's a betrayal coming. You're like, oh, this dude's just, he's trying to get a big, he's given a big ask.
Right, right. And the, you know, the sake's flowing like wine. He's telling the stories. His lips are very loose in this moment. And so, yeah, it seems like he's just kind of a little bit drunk. He's a big kind of braggadocious type fella.
A little bit of a wild man, yeah.
He's kind of a wild man. Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't carry the same level of like stoic, you know.
No, and I thought, and that's, we'll touch on this more again later, but I really, really, really like his character because I think it spoke to some of the way that, like, everything we always hear and what we see in this culture, very highly valued, is honor, honor, honor. Torinaga even says in this scene, he's like, ah, I'm very honored to be given this request to come have to commit seppuku on myself.
Right.
Very honored to be, that you brought this to my attention, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's all, and Psyche kind of cuts through that bullshit a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And later on, like, I love how he is like, this death is not death is not beauty.
Yeah, where's the beauty
in
this?
It's a lonely fucking path in the woods, man. Like, and so that kind of, that air that he brings where he is a little bit irreverent towards to all of it is pretty interesting. I thought it was a nice foil.
No, most definitely. I mean, it was something that really got me thinking, like, you know, everyone we've encountered on the show so far, sans Blackthorn, is all in on this lifestyle. They all very strictly adhere to the honor code.
People cannot stop requesting to die.
They all want to be able to commit seppuku, right?
Yeah.
And you don't really think about it as you're watching episodes 1 through 6, but like surely there are outliers or people who are so sort of turned off by these concepts that they operate outside of the realms of them. And we finally have one here, right?
Yeah.
That's not a foreigner, right? That's
yes.
a dude that's kind of in line with Blackthorn, but is a Japanese lord.
Right.
And his background also gives you some insight into how he became this way, because when they first meet with him in the woods, Psyche and Torinaga, Psyche says like, or Torinaga says, "You look really good." And Psyche's like, "Yeah, well, you would look really good too if all you had to do was preside over this fucking lake." Mm-hmm. Right? So he's saying like, he didn't even really have a part in this bigger picture out there, right? Which probably broke him even further from the whole honor code thing. But you're right. He's a really interesting character for that reason. It was cool to watch him operate in these scenes where, you know, for six episodes, we've seen nothing but like the straight-laced version of it.
Right.
And then we have this unhinged dude who's just can't shut the fuck up, kind of disrupting the peace here.
Yeah.
So yeah, then he tells the story of, after suggesting like, "Hey, I should get Izu," he tells the story of how when Torinaga was a boy and he was sent away as a hostage, he shit his pants getting on the horse to like ride off. He was scared, saying he was scared. The vibes take a turn here. Mm-hmm. Very bad. And then pretty quickly, Psyche reveals that he has been made a member of the Council of Regents as his men like surround the town and prevent anyone from leaving. And you realize Torinaga's half-brother, who they were looking to potentially be their ally in the storming of Osaka, has in fact already been approached by the people of Osaka and Ishidu specifically, made a member of the Council of Regents, and is a turncoat of sorts. Will not be helping them out.
No,
he's an enemy. He's a bad guy. And the scene is tense because you're like, oh shit, surely there's going to be a fight right here and now. Even Bantaro's like worked up. People are like standing up and like, you know, hand on the sword, like I'm ready to draw. But Torinaga does, as you noted, like he's like, "I am honored by this request to return to Osaka and you know, be given orders to commit seppuku as a traitor." Which as a viewer, you're like, come on.
Yeah.
For the love of God, do something, man. What the fuck is this? Orders his men to stand down, accepts the situation. Very, very strange stuff. Psyche gives Torinaga a message, the you know, like the scroll or whatever. He kind of throws it at Hiramatsu. Again, disrespectful.
Yep.
He's been summoned to Osaka to answer for his treachery. Torinaga says he needs some time to think about it, and he'll let Psyche know by tomorrow at sunset, which is, again, it's just weird. I can't tell you now. I'm going to go think on it. If I can come up with anything better than going and killing myself.
Well, I'll let you know.
I'll let you know, yeah.
Psyche's willingness to tell stories, especially those that revolve around like a battle or a death, right? Again, another piece that is antithetical to what we've been told, right? Where like Bantaro refuses to talk about his escapades, his fights, his battles, where he's been this like great warrior.
Right.
You got to imagine that had Blackthorn asked Psyche, he probably would have gotten a story or two.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, very, very just has a different mindset. Which has, I guess, has just been brewing out there on the lake.
So. Yeah. Psyche also gives Torinaga's son, Nagakoto, an order to commit seppuku, which he's like reaching out to accept, like, oh, fuck, I guess I'm done.
Yeah.
And Torinaga has to yell, you know, do not accept it.
Yeah.
I guess like, if you accept it, like,
right. It's kind of like being served.
Right.
You
exactly.
Know? You don't accept the papers and they can't say that you received them.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, Nagakoto does not accept, not that it matters by the end of the episode, but just another crazy moment, Torinaga kind of trying to protect his idiot son.
Yes, yes.
And then Torinaga just kind of like walks around contemplating his next move as his men eagerly await his plan, but like Hiramatsu, Bantaro, and Nagakoto are all out there with him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell even Hiramatsu and Bantaro are kind of getting impatient, like, God damn, really mirrored me as an audience member, like, because I'm sitting most of this episode, I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Like, get it going. Do something. What's the plan? What are we doing Crimson Sky? Are we not doing Crimson Sky? What the fuck is Crimson Sky? What are you doing with Blackthorn? What are we doing? Nagakoto, of course, is the one who speaks up, like, kind of calls his dad out for a lack of a plan, and Torinaga basically ignores him and says, why is it always those who have never been in a battle who are so eager to be in one?
That was a good line.
A sentiment that I'm almost positive is actually communicated in Game of Thrones as well at some point. And yeah, before we move forward, today's episode is brought to you by listeners supporting our show by subscribing on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles in exchange for so much more OCC ad-free. A reminder, Barrett and I went to see Dune Part 2 in theaters, then we recorded an hour-long discussion and review of Dune Part 2, which is available exclusively to enjoy on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And if you want to go and enjoy that now, it won't cost you a dime, because right now on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. That's 7 days of membership for free, during which you can enjoy our entire discussion and review of Dune Part 2 in either audio form by joining the Clam Fam tier, or have video as an option by joining the Mollusk Militia tier. In addition to Dune Part 2, subscribing on Patreon will also give you access to other movies we've discussed and reviewed over the years, like Saltburn, Oppenheimer, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, Interstellar, Joker, Casino Royale, Tenet, 1917, Ex Machina, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Booksmart, Knives Out, and more. You can see all the movies we've discussed and reviewed by clicking on the Movie Club collection on our Patreon. And of course, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles is also home to our entire companion podcast for every single episode of HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, as well as our weekly bonus coverage of Shogun, which Barrett and I will be doing again later this week, as well as bonus coverage of House of the Dragon, Succession, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, Foundation, Silo, True Detective, Night Country. And when you join, you gain access to our entire backlog of ad-free premium content. We're talking years of OCC you've never heard or seen if you've never been on Patreon. And again, right now, it's completely free for you to join for 7 days, and then it's just $5 per month for the Clam Fam tier, or $10 per month to join the Mollusk Militia tier, where you can also gain access to full video of most of our episodes if you're a YouTube watcher, plus the Mollusk Militia exclusive hotline number for a chance to be featured on the show when you call in, and the Mollusk Militia exclusive Discord as well. All of this while supporting your favorite podcast. What a deal. Act now. This 7-day free trial won't be available forever. And also, while we appreciate you being here with us to enjoy Shogun, we must remind you that we started off as a Game of Thrones podcast way back in the day, so obviously we hope to be your go-to companion podcast when House of the Dragon returns for Season 2 this June. And finally, our show is available not only on all the major podcast platforms, but also on YouTube as well. YouTube.com/@oystersclamscockles. Subscribe, rate, review, share our show with those you know. Thank you very much.
10-year anniversary of Interstellar later this year.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Coming back to IMAX, they say.
Go check out that Interstellar pod on Patreon. All right, back to Shogun. Saiki delivers Yabushige a response from the Council of Regents. As you'll remember, he sent his general with the eye patch over there to negotiate the peace. It turns out they did not accept.
No.
They have basically told Yabushige, you are stuck with Torunaga. You chose your side.
Yeah.
Sorry, pal. It's his head in a box.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's the gift.
I got the message. I understood.
Yeah.
It was a no. They passed.
Yeah. then Torunaga meets with Jin, the owner of Willow World. You know, stick of time thing. Now, this was a big scene that was multi-layered for sure.
Yep.
Where Jin, she asks for land to build a new Willow World. And in conjunction with that, the protection of Torunaga's clan, even after he is gone.
And I believe this is in Edo that she would, you know, future Tokyo, basically. And she wants new land, and she envisions a district of tea houses that's not, you know, spurned, basically, or looked down upon for being a bunch of brothels.
Right.
It's on the up and up, basically.
Look what I've done here with Willow World.
Yeah. Yeah.
See how it's this nice, classy part of society that, you know, isn't looked on as a stain. I could build a district where courtesans are protected and respected, and we function in our own little neighborhood, basically.
Right, and essentially, like she wants a guild for them. Basically, she wants to unionize the courtesans and essentially set up this, like, look, we dedicate ourselves to serving, to being beautiful, to learning all these things, to, you know, the but this is we only get to do this for a limited amount of time while we're young and hot, basically.
Right.
And then we're disposed of, and
we need a retirement plan.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
We need protection and respect.
Yes.
Now, Jin, when Torunaga's like,
very progressive thoughts for the 1600s.
Very much so.
Right?
She also adds in, like, she is the most successful woman in Izu.
Right.
Right. She is, she built herself up from nothing, tells that whole story about, you know, she came from nothing, built herself up to be the most successful woman in Izu. And
she out the mud.
She got it out the mud. And he's like, look, I'm going to be dead as hell very soon. I am not going to be helpful here. Your plan is too far reaching into the future for me to be involved in. Sorry. And then Jin seems to suggest that Torunaga is kind of unnecessarily accepting his fate. And then I didn't really understand what she hoped he would take from the conversation, but it gets interesting when you consider the end of the episode, okay?
Well,
that's at Willow World where we see Psyche get attacked at the end of the episode.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That is at Willow World?
I mean, unless he was allowed to take Kiku into his own personal residence or whatever.
Huh. Okay.
So between Jin telling the dude earlier, Omi, hey, Blackthorn was thinking about Mariko,
right,
didn't even pillow with Kiku.
Yeah.
And this moment where she's here asking Torunaga for, you know, basically some land, a fief of some kind, protection, and like unionization in the future. And then the attack happening at the end of the episode, Willow World is all over the place here.
Well, here was my read. I watched this scene twice. She begins to suggest to him that leaving his army out in the open, not utilizing a network of spies that we know that he probably has, to be warned that this army was coming and surrounding them, etc., that these moves could not possibly have been just a slip up in judgment and an error made.
Right.
That these were purposeful moves and mistakes. Now, he looks like a deer in the headlights when she suggests this. There is no twinkle in his eye to suggest that maybe she has caught on to his longer game. But we talked about this last week. What is this dude doing? And I'm now actually so much so that last week I was like, there's no fucking way Torunaga is working with Lady Ochiba. They're not in the same ship. They don't like each other. I'm already backpedaling on that.
Because there's nothing. What else?
Because this scene, it has to be intentional. There has to be a reason for this scene where Jin is down on her knees. The stick of time has essentially run out, and she has the gall to suggest this to Big Boss Man, that he is plotting something else, that this is all intentional.
This would be too stupid. You're better than this.
Yes. To just put his swords down, no plan. This is echoed again by Blackthorn when he officially surrenders. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, Mr. Trickery over here, the master of schemes, is just like laying everything down and boning all of y'all?
Yeah.
Like, we're all going to die because this dude doesn't have a plan?
Right.
With all his networks of spies and his scheming and his four steps ahead of everybody? Like, what is happening? So this, those two scenes together, I'm like, okay, we're missing something here. There's something that Torunaga has up his sleeve. And I do believe that. I think that is accurate. Otherwise, I don't know why we're getting this scene.
Well, because the season and the title of the show would suggest somebody is going to become shogun. Now, doesn't feel like it's going to be a Shidu. We're not even spending time with those guys.
Right.
This is our protagonist here, Torunaga.
Yeah.
This is the dude we're geared up to watch. That's the home team we're rooting for, right?
Yeah.
That's what we've gotten through seven episodes, which made this episode a very frustrating watch because I watched it immediately after watching two actual sports teams I root for shit the bed. And in 1 hour, the Rockets and Astros both shit the bed. Then I went and watched Shogun, and Torunaga's just, like you said, kind of a deer in the headlights,
right,
where I'm like, what the hell is everybody doing?
Yeah.
Somebody win! And it was really frustrating. But yeah, the scene with Jin, you're right. She does seem to be calling him out like, hey, look, man, whatever just happened here, this isn't you.
Yeah.
So something's going on.
Right.
Right? But it almost, in a way, it was almost like, it was like she was like, look, if you don't have a plan, like, you need to have one. You need to be doing something, and maybe I can help.
Yeah. So to jump to that, we also get the scene with Omi and Nagakoto talking in the hot springs,
right,
about how they just need a plan. They
yes.
just need a plan.
Yeah.
And we know that they are growing tired of waiting for Torunaga to give them one.
Right.
We also know that Nagakoto is a bit of a dipshit and has a, you know, a bit of a hairpin trigger. Yes. So my read on this was totally that this was another kind of boneheaded plan cooked up by Nagakoto, which goes horribly awry once again and leads to his death. more so than anything else, just because we don't see anybody else there. We don't see any other. We don't see Buntaro or our general
Hiramatsu.
Thank you. We don't even see Omi. So there's like no, like they didn't bring the big guns to this potential assassination. And I also again, there's an entire army surrounding Izu right now. What good is killing Saiki? Again, like that, and I think that you know that's not really a play. Otherwise, they just do that after he reveals that he's betrayed them all.
Well, surely during the course of the episode, there are moments where you're thinking, "Oh, Torunaga's going to kill his half brother.
Yeah.
He's going to have to, right?" But yeah, okay. Let's get
again,
the rest of this.
That could be emotional or kind of a crime of passion, right? Because it's like, fuck you, brother. Like, I can't believe you did this to me. Like, even though I'm not going to gain anything from this, I'm at least taking you down with me, right? But for the way that the ending shakes out, which, you know, I mean, I won't step out any further, but for me, I wasn't tying Jin's confrontation and suggestions to Torunaga with the plot at the end.
Oh, I'll tie him up for you.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Okay, so Yabushige goes and bathes in the hot springs in front of Saiki's men, which was... I don't even really know what I was supposed to take away from this, except that Yabushige is being like, look, I'm badass. I'll get in here right in front of y'all. I do not care. I am so dead anyway. Fuck it. This is my hot tub.
Yeah.
Right? Then, like you said, Nagakoto and Omi share a hot spring. Nagakoto calls Saiki and his men spineless dogs. Then, of course, Saiki, like, walks out from behind them, mm-hmm. like, spineless dogs, huh? Gives that whole speech about, like, you know, how... Basically, this kid is desperate to get into battle and get killed, but that's not the way you should be going. Like, there's life to be lived. It's, you know, Nagakoto says the thing about, like, the beauty. If I die, there'd be a beautiful death. He's like, that's fucking nonsense, this Saiki guy. You're too eager to die. You're mistaking death for beauty when it's just a lonely path in the woods, right? But that scene does seem to be another one where Omi, much less so this time, is not really spurning, you know, Nagakoto into doing something stupid. He seems to just be genuinely concerned for his livelihood and life, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's just more two dudes discussing, like, are we going to get a plan here? More so than earlier in the season where Omi was clearly egging him on to do some dumb shit.
Yeah.
So Yabushige then, in a wild scene, stumbles across Blackthorn, who is, like, just staring at his ship. trying to mentally figure out,
and
you know.
And sees another one coming in, and somebody
and
tells him that it's got Ishido's flag.
Right. Which that didn't really get touched on any further, but, like, Ishido has, like, a maritime presence here now.
Yeah, yeah, seems like it, yeah.
Again, like, they're surrounded as hell,
yeah.
this Izu. Blackthorn's watching his ship. Yabushige stumbles up to him, knowing, like, they can't really understand each other, just starts talking some general shit.
Yeah.
And then he's like, look at you with your fucking swords. He's like, pull one of those fuckers out. Let's see what you got. And it turns out Blackthorn, absolutely worthless with a sword, which I didn't really see coming, but I guess he's just like a sailor and a pistol guy.
He has been telling us over and over again that he does not have any cavalry experience.
And he was not
and
lying.
He was not lying.
Holy crap. He is really, really bad. Like,
and honestly, I did appreciate this scene because it felt authentic, right? Like, it would be very kind of expected for our hero, if you will, to, of course, be, like, you know, very proficient with a sword, even though he's never touched a samurai sword in his life.
And or just able to pick it up really quickly.
Yeah, and he's just a natural, and he picks up the couple moves real quick and is suddenly sparring with Yabushige. No, he's a turd out there and gets his ass beat.
Yeah, he gets embarrassed really badly. And then, like, as Yabushige has Blackthorn on his back, you know, has kind of made an ass out of him,
mm-hmm.
Buntaro runs up and puts his sword to Blackthorn's neck like, I'm going to fucking do it. I'll do it right here. I'm going to do it. And, I mean, you know he's not going to, but you're like, God damn. And it's important to note. So we saw Omi getting the information from Jin at the beginning of the episode that, like, Blackthorn was thinking about somebody else. Like Barrett said, it was easy to put together. Mariko was the other woman there. She's his translator. There's already rumors and shit in the town, blah, blah, blah. Omi has spent time over the course of the episode sort of dripping poison into Buntaro's ear. He asks him the question at the one meeting. He's like, oh, you must feel really proud that your wife takes her duty to the barbarians so very seriously. And Buntaro's like, you mean her duty to our lord.
Yeah.
Omi has been getting into Bontaro's head about this Mariko situation. He has been tipped off, and this is him acting out of anger, jealousy, rage, right? That Mariko and Blackthorn have some kind of a thing. But he doesn't kill him, ends up walking off, and Yabushige's like, you would have died if I wasn't here, you fucking idiot. And then we move on. Torunaga writes a will. It's not Yabushige writing a will this time. It's Torunaga. And in his will, he includes Jin.
Yeah, some land for
Jin. She get the land in Edo to use as she wishes for a new Willow world.
Yeah.
Which is strange, because at the end of that meeting, you didn't really feel like he had necessarily been, like, taken by what she had to say.
Right.
But that gets added in there. Bontaro shows up. He asks for permission to kill Blackthorn. Torunaga's like, why? He's like, well, he likes my wife.
He's been making eyes at my wife.
He likes my wife. And Torunaga says, you can only have Blackthorn's head if you also accuse your wife of basically seducing him.
Yeah.
Bontaro refuses to accuse his wife, fumes, and leaves.
Not only would have to accuse her, but to take her head
kill
as
her,
well.
Kill her as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't do it. Bounces, which is a kind of a cool moment for the Bontaro character, because you're like, see, he does love her on some level.
Right. Yeah.
Once he's gone, Mariko, for the, I don't know, 12th time this season, as many times as Blackthorn has asked for his boat, this woman has asked to kill herself.
That's right.
And she's like, basically, Torunaga is like, look, what's going on? What's the deal with you, Blackthorn?
What's the deal with you and Blackthorn?
What is going on? And she says, you know, I've always served you like faithfully and utterly. That being said, I would really like to die.
Yeah.
please. She like pulls out her little knife.
She doesn't really answer the question.
No, she doesn't. But she pulls out her, I think her not answering it also kind of answers it.
Okay.
She pulls out her little knife that she keeps on her person at all times.
That she's kind of in love with the Anjin a little bit.
I think the request for seppuku here is sort of an acknowledgement that
almost
like,
of shame and an added layer of guilt, shame,
yeah,
torture
a little bit. I mean, if you're Torunaga, you've read into it for episode after episode. Now I think
That makes sense.
She wants to kill herself. He's irate, knocks the little knife out of her hand, and that's that. Refuses to allow her to. Then Torunaga, at the end, he tells Saiki he will travel to Osaka and submit to the will of the Council of Regents and Lord Ishidu. He tells Saiki this in front of all of Torunaga's own men, right? Blackthorn included, Mariko included, everybody's there. Hiramatsu, Nagakoto, Bontaro, all his main guys, who none of which seem to be they're all in the dark. He's saying this in front of them for the first time.
Yeah.
That he's gonna, he's giving up.
And very much implied. This means likely death for all of them as well.
Yeah. Yabushige and Nagakoto both kind of try to stand up and talk him out of it. He refuses to be swayed, says Crimson Sky was a mistake. And then Blackthorn gets upset, says Torunaga has let all his men down, that they're all going to die, right? That Torunaga tricked his own loyal vassals into a noiseless smothering. Crimson fucking horse shit. And it's a big scene because, I mean, again, I felt the same way that Blackthorn did. I'm like, what the fuck, guy?
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing? What is going on? Saiki tells Torunaga that tomorrow they will leave for Osaka, and he says, quote, from this day, you have nowhere to go and nothing left to be. And it feels and seems like Torunaga is completely defeated, which we will get to in a second. But to close out episode 7, Saiki is pillowing with Kiku and participating in some autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
When she asks him if he'd like to elevate their play, saying she has other tools to enhance his pleasure. So again, I'm led to believe this is in Willow World, because that's where Kiku stays, and that's where this guy has been, shacked up for the week is paid for, right? He agrees to the elevated play. She leaves the room, and I'm thinking, holy shit, Kiku's going to come back and kill this guy.
Yeah, same.
He's looking out at the rain.
It's like we're getting some femme fatale, vibes from her. You definitely think she's going to come back and choke him to death.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's looking out at the rain. You're all queued up to think that's what's going to happen. suddenly you hear a body drop, and Psyche's like, what the hell? Turns around, puts his robe on, walks out there, and sees like another one of his men get their throat cut. And then, of course, the jackass, Naga Kodo, comes in with his men. He ends up attacking Psyche and his men. They go. He goes after Psyche himself, chases him outside. All right. He's about to strike like a... Well, first of all, I would note, Psyche himself seems to twist or break his ankle in this little pond.
Yeah.
Which is why he's down. And then Naga Kodo slips, like takes a step to swing, slips, falls straight backwards, cracks his head wide open,
yeah,
and bleeds out into the pond. That worst assassination attempt
in a really, yeah, in a really brutal, not pretty way, not okay. not beautiful way.
Now, to what we were talking about earlier,
yeah,
the fact that it's Kiku who seems she's like in on this with Naga Kodo.
You
somehow.
Got okay, yes, that part I think. Surely that part is accurate.
And I don't think Kiku would be allowed to be in on it with Naga Kodo unless Jin had signed off on this somehow. So it seems like this was an attempt by Jin to try to help Torunaga.
Okay.
I don't really know. Something is there going on there though. Like that was very weird.
Yeah, I don't understand what taking out Psyche does at this point.
I think it was like a head of the snake situation almost. Yeah. Like, all right, we kill this dude, then Torunaga can be like, army, you are now mine, right? Like, I don't really know. Didn't get any clarification around any of that or like any ideas. There was no discussion of it. Like, at no point was Torunaga like, what we need to do is take out my half brother, right? No suggestion that he thinks that's a good idea.
And like I said just a few minutes ago, I know that there's all sorts of honor codes and stuff built in this, but they're clearly violating one here anyway. So you got this dude surrounded by all your guys at the dinner.
Yeah,
just take him out.
Wouldn't that have been the time?
Wouldn't that have been the time to take him out? But yes, I do. Like, you have to assume, based on what they show us, that Kiku leaves to give
Naga Kodo
the opportunity to come in here and take this dude out. So yeah, how involved Jin is in this, or Torunaga to that degree, since they have clearly like they had their chat, they're working something out. He grants her the land in his will, etc. Like, what are all the ties here? Yeah, good. That's kind of an unknown.
But if Torunaga was in on it, I have a hard time believing he'd put his son in the position to be the one to kill.
Who we also know he thinks his son is an immature bozo.
He's already demoted him.
Yes.
Took away, you know, whatever he was, cannon practice.
He was in charge
of cannon practice at one point? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then he gave it to Omi, and then he took it from Omi and gave it to Blackthorn. Yeah. There's the cannon practice history.
Coaching tree?
Yeah, the coaching tree. Okay, so let's talk about where this leaves us, all right?
Yeah,
because things are going horribly for Torunaga. This episode, like I said, tough watch, because he's got Yabushige playing both sides, or was attempting to. Mm-hmm. Seems he's failed and now is stuck on the side that he didn't want to be on. His idiot son, Naga Kodo, is dead.
Yeah.
Because he forgot that rocks are slippery when they're in water. His interpreter wants to kill herself constantly. And his Hatamoto wants his ship and his men so he can leave Japan and never come back. That's the squad he's surrounded by.
Yeah.
Like, he really has one dude who's actually loyal and seems like he really wants to be there, which is Hiramatsu.
Yeah.
Even Buntaro, you know, his big, bad, legendary fighter.
Up in his feelings.
Yeah. And also questionable return, right? Like, we still not really sure what happened there with him getting back to Izu alive. Like you said, where else is there to go? Like, what is there to do? And you asked earlier, like, why not kill Psyche when he's in that room surrounded by all your men at the dinner? Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things they did show very quickly was, like, as Psyche is announcing, like, I've screwed you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in charge now. Look at me. I'm the captain now. A bunch of dudes rush up on that room. So, like, he's got soldiers surrounding that room, too.
Okay. Right.
And they do give us the shot at the beginning of the episode of his force. And he has a large, large army. He even says to Torunaga, like, so, in your desperation, you call on your worthless idiot brother. Mm-hmm. And his massive, massive army to come and save you. So I think it's just that he has so many guys.
Yeah,
they're utterly outnumbered here, which was the problem in the first place for them. So,
right.
Yeah, it makes you wonder about a couple of things. One, the Portuguese, like you brought up. Blackthorn's repeatedly requested to go to war with the Portuguese on Torunaga's behalf, and Torunaga has gone so far as to say, like, I have no intention of attacking them at any point. Mm-hmm. That was weird. Also the Lady O thing. Like, clearly, Torunaga has had communication with someone else, right? Because the show's story cannot be
that Torunaga goes to Osaka, gets his orders, kills himself.
And then that's
show's
it?
Over. You're right. Yeah. No, of course not.
Because what's the point of Blackthorn, right?
Yeah.
Him and Blackthorn are on the outs now. He just stood up and kind of showed him up in front of all his men. Like,
right. Yeah.
It just, everything is a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
Everything's falling apart. And I don't really know how they recover. Like,
that's why I'm led to, like, the fix here, the plan has to involve, now I think, working with the Portuguese in some way. At the very least, leveraging them somehow to get out of this, to fix this.
We did have Alvito, one of the Portuguese priests,
yeah,
attempting to sway a higher-up clergyman,
yep,
to switch sides
to
Torunaga.
Right.
So I guess that could come into play.
He's offered them the to establish a missionary, to establish a church in Edo.
Yes.
So
that's still out there in the wind. Blackthorn clearly comes into play here for Torunaga at some point as a positive, mm-hmm, in warfare. Otherwise, my God, what a waste of time we've been on a ride for. So,
right.
Yeah. Look, they've got three left, 8, 9, and 10. I thought this was another great episode. It just wasn't at all what I expected. I was just like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
They got 8, 9, and 10. Three episodes left, 3 weeks left. A lot can happen in 3 hours, obviously. But damn, it just made you feel like he's so screwed here, because now the very ending is like Psyche. What happens next with Psyche? He's obviously going to accuse Torunaga of having tried to assassinate him, right? Uh-huh. I doubt that'll put Torunaga in a better place to start episode 8.
No, it doesn't seem like it. I think that we're going to make our way to Osaka, and which also, like, when you're just kind of like mapping this all out and thinking about the game theory of it all, there's Torunaga, the only way to try to get back on top, to get some upper hand, is to leave Izu.
He's got to get the hell out of here.
They're stuck here. They're surrounded. They're stuck. There's nothing they can do. I thought it was interesting. They're all waiting for his plan. They're all waiting for him to say something. But there's no plan here.
He's got no options.
They're surrounded. There's nothing. They've got no army. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
So they have to get on the move. They have to go to give them more options, essentially. You know, once they're out in the open playing field, that's when other pieces of this, I think, will come in and start to factor in.
Yeah, part of my issue was that, like, watching Torunaga tell Psyche, you know, all right, I'm going to surrender. I'm going to come with you. We're going to go to Osaka.
Yeah.
It made me feel like he couldn't go back on that, you know? Like it's official, like it's written in stone once he says it, because he is Mr. Honor Code or whatever. Right. But I don't know. I mean, it was a super important line from Blackthorn where he's like, oh, look at you, the big, the boy warlord, the incredible schemer and deceiver who...
Tricky McTrickster.
Yeah, Tricky McTrickerson. And all you've done is trick your own men into all dying with you and for you and screwed all of us. Surely he's still got something going on. Because look, frankly, they have us so teed up for this at this point that it would be a sick twist to be like, and I was scheming McSchemerson the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, I did have some other fucking trick up my sleeve.
Oh, I think he definitely does.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I think the actual sick twist would be, nah, this dude just goes and dies.
Yeah, that's the end.
That would be, yeah, that would be something.
The moral of the story is sometimes it doesn't work out.
Right.
Yeah. The bad guys win.
Sometimes all the, you know, all the tricks in the world, just the well runs dry. Got no more pranks left to play.
Was this idiot Nagakoto his like heir and his only?
Well, he's got the pregnant wife.
Oh yeah,
that's still in Osaka.
And then I think he has grandkids.
Yeah,
because in his will he says like my grandkids.
I think Nagakoto was just like the closest of like coming of age boy son of his. Yeah,
just a turd out there.
But he was just a real turd out there.
He's gone. Yeah. Anyway, any final thoughts on this one?
No, man, I'm with you. I thought this was another really good one. I was on the edge of my seat. Great tension builder here, and Yeah, man, it really, really has me looking forward to the final three episodes. I'm sad that I will not be able to participate next week. I don't know. Maybe I should like call on the hotline or something. I don't know. Maybe we'll try to figure something out so I can at least get like a few minutes of thoughts off.
Barrett's out of town.
I'm out of town next week, and it feels like it's going to be a big one. At least a question answering one in some regard. You got to think that they set up whatever the play is in episode 8.
Because this has to be the low point.
Yeah.
It can't get worse.
I don't think it can get worse. No.
This is rock bottom.
His son just died.
Yeah. So you got to think.
He's trapped and going to Osaka. This is the low.
The upturn has to start next week, next you week. Would think. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, he's done a great job of not giving us a single freaking clue. Just like his men.
Right.
In terms of what's going on. Yeah, maybe you can call into the hotline next week as part of the Mollusk Militia and give us some of your takes. That would actually be cool. We've never done that before.
Yeah.
Never done that before, so that'd be a new one. Anyway, before Barrett heads out of town, we are going to record tomorrow doing our Patreon episode for this week, taking hotline calls from the Mollusk Militia and responding to them and further digesting and discussing episode 7 on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. But that'll do it for today's show. Remember, we are available on all the major podcast platforms, but also in full video on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles for your viewing pleasure. Please subscribe on YouTube, throw us a like, leave us a comment. Shout out to everyone watching on YouTube. We appreciate y'all. For more from me, check out the Ross Bolin podcast, wherever podcasts are played. If you're an F1 fan, check out Formula Bone, Bolin Media's premier F1 programming at youtube.com/@FormulaBone, as well as on the major podcast platforms and @FormulaBone on social media. If you're a Houston sports fan, check out @BangingTheCan, youtube.com/@BangingTheCan. It's my Houston sports show that I do usually once a week. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram @WRBolin. Mr. Dudley, where can the people follow you?
Yo, I am on Instagram @BarrettDudley. Occasionally dipping around on X as well.
X, formerly known as Twitter, @BarrettDudley. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We look forward to hearing everyone's reactions on Patreon and reading them on social media. And until next time, we hope you'll remember the old eightfold fence.